This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Is that a child?
No, no, it's okay.
See? I was beginning to believe that my boy was the only free one left.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week, work is well underway for a fundraiser where someone smashed a record-breaking home run out into the ocean to some unsuspecting fishermen. The Avery Women's Center and the Glace Bay Food Bank are reaching out for your help during the festive season. Speaking of the holidays, we'll tell you about an award-winning musician who's getting set to perform at one of Sydney's finest venues. And Escazoni's rolling out the welcome mat for a film director who is inspired by one of the most controversial moments in the history of the Oscars. Dennis Goulet is up first to talk about the screening of Night Raiders and how she became interested in making movies.
Pledge our hearts and give our allegiance to our glorious Republic and solemnly swear to protect it. One country, one language, one flag.
I had been traveling overseas as a young person and came back home to Saskatchewan, and I always had an interest in film. And my parents said, why don't you go put your resume in? There's a big production that had come, and it was really exciting. This was in Regina at the end of the 90s. So there wasn't a lot of production that came to a place like Regina, but they had just introduced a tax credit. And so I did put my resume in, but I thought, well, I have no film experience. No one's going to hire me. So, you know, I just did that and then moved on. But then strangely, someone who worked on the film production, who actually is Tasha Hubbard, who's an amazing documentary filmmaker from Saskatchewan, she ended up calling First Nations University and getting through to my mom's desk by coincidence, because she needed something on behalf of the production. So my mom answered her questions, and then after that did the mom thing, which is like, oh, my daughter put her resume in at her at your film production. And my friend Tasha, who I didn't know at the time, said, oh, okay, I'll check her out. And it just so happened that she was hiring an assistant, and I got an interview, and then got a testing day that I helped her with something, and then I was hired. And so that was my very first job, which I feel like I sort of like fumbled my way in by coincidence, but very much thanks to my mom doing her mom duty.
And was it after the CBC miniseries that you decided to study film in Toronto?
Yeah, I came out to Toronto to get into film, but yes, it absolutely was Big Bear, the miniseries, that just changed everything. I knew I always had an interest, and then as soon as I was on the film set, day one, I just, like, my mind was blowing wide open, and I just, like, said, this is it. And one of the producers, Doug Cuthand, came to visit set a few days in, and he said, so have you caught the bug? And I was just like, yeah, I'm done. Like, this is it. And so from there, I moved out to Toronto. I was working in casting at the time, and then I eventually switched over to film festivals and worked for the Indigenous Film Festival, Imaginative, and then eventually for TIFF, and then started making my own films along the way.
And Dennis, can you talk about this? You were asked to cast for an American TV pilot, and this is when you decided that you realized there was an opportunity to show the importance of Indigenous people taking key roles in film.
Yeah, I was, you know, like growing up in Saskatchewan as a young Cree Métis woman, I didn't see myself really ever portrayed. And so I was working in casting when I first got involved in the film industry, and I thought I would probably just stay there. It's not that I, had notions that I could actually be a director. But one time I was working on a U.S. television pilot for a casting director in the city. And at the beginning of the pilot, there's an Indigenous woman who is kind of like an Indian princess archetype. And she stands in front of a waterfall, spreads her arms silently, and then sacrifices herself. And I remember we called in all these incredible Indigenous actors into the room, and I just felt heartbroken in a way that they had so much talent, and like the best that, you know, that the show was offering them was to literally be silent and then die. And then I saw, because it's an audition, you're seeing the scene played on repeat. So I just watched over and over these talented, beautiful women voiceless and then dying over and over again. And it was a real moment for me, because I felt really ashamed to be there. And I thought, wow, like here I am working my way up in casting and trying to make a difference. But really where the power lies is the people creating the material. So the writers, the directors, the producers. And it was at that moment that I knew that we needed more of us in key creative roles. And so I looked around at the time and I thought, who could do this? And I just thought, I don't know if I can do this, but I know that I have to try. So that was sort of how I started to start making my own work. So I quit casting and I went to take a film workshop in New York and made my first short film, and definitely had no idea what I was doing, but I've tried to learn as I go.
You know, I think a lot of people may remember one of the more memorable moments in Oscar history at the Academy Awards. It was when Marlon Brando, he won an Oscar for one of his performances. But to protest, he asked, it was a young lady who was, she was an indigenous person from the U.S. at the time. Her last name escapes me now. I think her first name was Sasheen. But in protest for Marlon Brando, he wanted Sasheen to accept the award on his behalf to explain to the audience basically the same message that you're sharing now, that there is a certain negative portrayal when it comes to indigenous people on film.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Sasheen Littlefeather, and she was actually just recently passed away. And but before she passed, the Academy held a night in LA. It was actually earlier this year in the summertime, where they honored her and they apologized to her, because when that moment happened in the 70s, when she got up in front of Hollywood as an unknown indigenous woman, and she was there in place of Marlon Brando, you know, she was booed and jeered, and apparently John Wayne had to be held by security guards to stop from like going up. And so it's like, just for her to say, we deserve space, we deserve a voice, it's like she was just on the receiving end of hate for that. And you know, that people even felt like they would get violent over just a young woman simply saying, we deserve better. You know, so her taking that stand and in the face of where Hollywood was at the time was hugely inspirational to so many of us. You know, it's like she really didn't have to do that. And also to Marlon Brando for saying, I'm going to take this moment, you know, and instead of taking it, I'm going to give it to people that should, you know, have voices and be represented in the industry. So I feel like that's in film history, that's like a real moment, because, you know, before that, there was just such a lack of visibility. You know, it was rare to see, indigenous stories were on screen all the time, but they were portrayed in like harmful and racist ways, like all of the sort of American Westerns where the indigenous characters were just there to be, you know, killed or like, you know, just get out of the way of the American progress. And so, it was like a very damaging time in film history. And I feel like that moment marks like a moment where someone stood up and asked for that to change.
Dennis, I was actually able just to do a very quick Google search to find that clip on YouTube of Sasheen accepting the award on Marlon Brando's behalf. And for anyone who hasn't heard it, I'll just play a bit of it here.
I learned a great deal from a director named Ingmar Bergman. Often to be most eloquent is to be silent.
You're quite right. The film we've just seen has said it all. I think we should say that those nominated for the best performance by an actor are
Marlon Brando in The Godfather,
Michael Caine in Sleuth,
Laurence Olivier in Sleuth,
Peter O'Toole in The Ruling Class,
Paul Winfield in Sounder, The winner is... Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
Accepting the award for Marlon Brando in The Godfather, Miss Shasheen Littlefeather.
Hello, my name is Shasheen Littlefeather. I'm Apache, and I'm president of the National Native American Affirmative Image Committee. I'm representing Marlon Brando this evening, and he has asked me to tell you in a very long speech, which I cannot share with you presently because of time, but I will be glad to share with the press afterwards, that he very regretfully cannot accept this very generous award. And the reasons for this being are the treatment of American Indians today by the film industry. Excuse me. And on television, in movie reruns, and also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee. I beg at this time that I have not intruded upon this evening, and that we will, in the future, our hearts and our understandings will meet with love and generosity. Thank you on behalf of Marlon Brando.
Okay, so I will just have to do a bit of editing and production there later, Dennis. But and I'm sorry, I was incorrect in saying that Shasheen had accepted the award. She actually rejected the award. Nonetheless, a landmark moment in film history.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just it is, you know, the history of, you know, Indigenous representation on screen and especially in Hollywood has been one of misrepresentation and underrepresentation. And so, again, like speaking to that time where the U.S. Westerns were still really popular and like the cowboys were the heroes and the Indigenous people were either there to be killed or they were just, you know, totally portrayed in racist and stereotypical ways. For someone to actually stand up in front of such a powerful group of people and say that this isn't right and we must do better took such an enormous amount of courage. And, you know, it took many decades, even after she did that, for things to start to change. You know, like I think around the 70s, I mean, it was so rare that you would actually see an Indigenous actor portraying an Indigenous person. Like it was still a time where it was totally acceptable for people to kind of like actors to be in red face, like they weren't even playing themselves. And so, you know, Chief Dan George as an actor, I think in the 70s really started to change things in different movies that he was in. And there were some early actors that came about. But certainly the notion that an Indigenous filmmaker would be in a position like a director or producer was like entirely unheard of. And here in Canada, we had the great Alanis Abomsawin, the documentary filmmaker, and she made her very first short film in the early 70s, Christmas at Moose Factory. But, you know, and then there was a group at the National Film Board in the 90s that started to make up this group of Indigenous filmmakers. But the idea that we had deserved to tell our own stories, you know, took decades and decades of advocacy. And that moment at the Oscars in the 70s was like a really important moment along that journey.
And speaking of your film history there, Dennis, if we can get back to that for a moment, there's a screening coming up in Escazoni, and that was coordinated by someone we had on the show recently, a young comedian, very good at his job, Clifton Cremo. And obviously he spoke very highly of you, and he suggested that we speak to you about this screening.
Yeah, absolutely. We're screening in Escazoni on December 1st at 7 p.m. at the Sarah Denny Cultural Center. So I'm really excited about this. You know, like Knight Riders had a theatrical release last year and it was in the pandemic, but I've also wanted to bring it to smaller places that may not have access to theaters, and I've never been to Cape Breton before. And so I reached out to my friend Nelson McDonald, who's from Nova Scotia, and he introduced me to Clifton, and I was so happy to make that connection because I've never been to Cape Breton before, and I've heard so much about it and the landscape and the people, and I'm just really excited to be welcomed there and to bring the film and screen it.
And Knight Riders received very high praise from audiences everywhere and from film festivals, including the Toronto Film Festival, and many nominations and awards. Did you would make this kind of an impact? Did you realize that you're on something very special and creative here?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't think you... you know, like you're just in the process when you're making it. And I think when we were shooting Knight Riders, we certainly felt that there was a cohesion and that something special was happening. And I know that there were days on set where I just felt so grateful for where the actors dared to go. And so, you know, like it was challenging, it was ambitious, it was really a full-on experience. But I remember feeling so excited about what we were getting and just so grateful for the cast and the work that they were doing, and really everyone on the creative teams, you know, from the production designer to the cinematographer. And so, you know, by the time we get done, and, you know, by the time you've done like editing, you've seen this movie like hundreds of times. And so you lose all perspective at a certain point. So by the time it goes out into the world, it's like you really have no idea, you know, what the response is going to be. So, you know, you cross your fingers and start to send it out there.
I'd like to ask you about one of the characters in the film, Knight Riders, a very famous person. Certainly a lot of people would remember her from what's described as one of the best movies ever, in Pulp Fiction by Quentin Tarantino. And she plays a memorable role in that movie, Amanda Plummer. And by the way, Christopher Plummer's daughter.
Yes, she is Christopher Plummer's daughter. And yeah, she's like a 90s icon from that opening scene in Pulp Fiction where they stand up and hold up the diner. And, you know, she's been in all kinds of things, but this character was always kind of like a strange, quirky sort of has a strange kind of energy to her. And it was actually the casting director in the U.S. that said, "What do you think of Amanda Plummer?" And I thought it was a great idea from the get-go. And so we had a conversation, and she was amazing. And like, she's so I've never quite worked with an actor like her. She's really intuitive and very responsive to what's happening in the moment, and it's a really beautiful thing to witness. She's so, so committed, and it was super cool to work with her.
So if anyone was to see your list of credits, all the projects you've worked on, very impressive. I strongly encourage people to go look up Danis Goulet and see some of the projects that she's been working on. And I'm sure, like most people who work in your industry there, Danis, there's no rest for the weary. What are some of the other projects that you're working on, and what are you looking forward to for 2023?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm starting to develop a new project. I've also been directing some television. So I did a Netflix movie after Knight Riders, and then I also did an episode of Reservation Dogs, which is an FX show that shoots in Oklahoma. And then I just finished in Vancouver an episode of a show called Alaska Daily for ABC with Hilary Swank. So yeah, that was all of them really amazing experiences, just like different contexts, learning more as a director. And, you know, it's just anyone that knows how fickle the film industry can be, it's just like feels amazing to get opportunities, you know, after you've been slogging it out as an independent filmmaker for so many years.
Danis, while I was preparing for this, I just jotted down a couple of random type questions in the style of some of the late night shows. And if time allowed, I just wanted to ask you some of these fun or random questions. But if you weren't a filmmaker, what do you think you'd be doing as a career?
Oh, that's an interesting question. When I first got out of high school, I was accepted into UBC's science program. And I was going to go, and then at the last minute, I decided to take some time off and go backpacking. And then when I came back to Saskatchewan, I got into film. So I feel like, I guess that could have been a potential juncture. And then I also grew up in a political family. My dad was a politician pretty much since, you know, I was in elementary school all the way up until, you know, after I had left high school. And growing up around politics was a very sometimes challenging, but also a really dynamic environment. And so I felt like maybe I might do that at some point. But no, film was it. I caught the bug and never left.
Okay, another quick one. As a film director, when you're working with the cast, do you give the actors a creative license to improvise, or do you prefer that they stick to the script?
For me, I think it really depends on the actor and what their comfort level is. You know, I think for some people it really makes sense to stick to the script. But I always work with an openness to say that if we need to change things up, or if it feels more natural for someone to say it in a different way, or if we just need to not say that line and instead do this, that flexibility in the process is something that I really value. So I'm never the stickler that's going to say it has to be like every word for word as it's written. I think it's really important that as we're working through things that we're able to move and pivot to try new things. So yeah, I work kind of in both ways.
Okay, speaking with Dennis Goulet, filmmaker, taking the call today from Saskatchewan. Thanks very much for all the time that you spent with us. That was fun, Dennis, and I hope you enjoy your time here in Cape Breton.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to being there. I'm so excited. I've heard so much, and I can't wait to come.
The gift of giving is the theme of our next segment. Money is pretty tight these days for many, many people, and sometimes those are the ones that give the most. The Every Women's Center certainly hopes that's the case this upcoming Christmas. Here's Bill Bradley.
Let's take you back to 1992. That's the year that Every Women's Center opened, and shortly after that, adopt a family, getting ready to go for Christmas. And we want to put the message out there that if you haven't sponsored a family, or maybe you might want to sponsor a family this year, now is an opportunity to do so. And the lady that knows that and takes all the orders, including the donations, is Wanda Earhart. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. As we close in on Christmas, we want to let people know that there's a way to give, and they can either drop it off there or make a phone call. How does it work to adopt a family?
Oh, my goodness. It's a fun, you know, kind of concept. People usually contact me, and I send them out a little package of a couple of sheets of paper with some background information, and they have a look at our little cost chart. Gives you a minimum idea of what it takes to adopt a family. Then they have a little discussion, and you know, then they either email me back or call me back, and I can send them out a profile of a family. So once we register the families, we write profiles of each of the families, a little story, you know, of each of the families, and it's kind of a fun way to get involved.
Well, as you know, over the last number of years with the COVID and the prices going up too, it's been tough for a lot of people, and we get that, but and it's not for everybody, but if you can give, it would be really appreciated to help out these families.
And people are usually very surprised at how very little it takes to really get involved in adopting a family. Moms and dads out there, they're not expecting this humongous, you know, truck to pull up with a great big parcel. She's worried about dinner, especially these days with the cost of groceries. So, you know, when people come and they, you know, take a family, get the wish items for the children, a few extra, you know, little things like maybe an extra toy or some pajamas and a little gift for mom. And mom is thrilled. when the parcel comes. So people sometimes think it's going to be a great big expense and that they're not really going to be able to do it. But if they give us a call or give me an email, I can definitely show them that, you know, it doesn't take a lot. And I'm noticing definitely over the last couple of years with so much happening, COVID, now Fiona, the price of groceries, people are really thinking about their Christmas spending. So a great idea that people have been doing, instead of buying each other gifts, they'll come in and adopt a family. And it shows giving in the community, and it's a great way to show the Christmas spirit. And they feel good about that. They're not going out shopping for things that people don't need. And we actually have an adopt-a-family card that people, if they make a donation or adopt a family, they can actually present the card to somebody in their honor by adopting a family.
Well, although you can't see the smiles on their faces, trust me, they have big smiles on their faces mm-hmm. when they receive this package. And stuff that we take for granted each and every day. You know, you go out and get your groceries, and we all realize the price has gone up. But stuff we just take for granted. Some people don't have that luxury of having a great meal or having some toys for the kids for Christmas. But this is an opportunity, like you said, to give back. I've always had this motto, it's better to give them receive, and I tell you, you'll feel great about it if you have an opportunity to do so.
They have a great feeling when they leave the center after dropping off their parcel. They know that on Christmas morning, just envisioning kids running down the stairs and opening up the gifts, and Santa has come, and Mom, of course, is relieved that, you know, it's all happening thanks to the good nature and kindness of the community.
Now, for folks that don't know, I know we chatted about it a while back. How many families are you talking about this year?
We generally do, you know, 600 families. We're well over 500 now. You know, now we're at the stage where we need the community. Adoptions have been going pretty steady. Our regular donors, I mean, they start calling me in September, October. When can I get my family? And then you have new people who, you know, are just learning about the program. So now is the time. There's still a couple of weeks to play with before the parcels have to come back. And people need to know it's very simple things. You don't have to go searching. We really try to name some things that are pretty easy to get locally, but it gives you a great feeling to know that you're helping a family. So now's the time to call or email. It's very easy. They can email Wanda@everywomancenter.com, and they can get all the information, have a discussion over supper, and get back to me, and I can get a family to them ASAP.
They can also call, right?
Oh, they can call for sure. Yes.
Yeah. 567-1212, right?
I think I remember that.
I remember that off the top of my head.
Very good.
So what are your hours when folks want to get in contact with you? Let's say if I'm calling by phone.
Yep. I'm generally here by 8:30 in the mornings. And we're here these days till 4. As we get closer, we start staying till about 5. Right now, we're here till 4 for sure. And we can accommodate anybody if they're coming from work or whatever. They just need to call and let us know they want to come in. And the other thing I didn't point out, they can actually come in and have a look at the profiles. I mean, people make a big production. Some of our donors, they love to come in, they have a seat. I give them some profiles and they pore over them and they narrow it down. It's quite a deal for some people choosing their family. So it's a little bit of fun put into it. So people can also come into the center and say, I want to adopt a family, and actually pick out the family they want.
We appreciate this, and we want to say very Merry Christmas here from the Coast 89.7, and hopefully we get all those wishes that people are looking for.
Well, we appreciate all the support, Bill, and we love how the community comes out and supports us each and every year. We just want to stress, you know, we know it's difficult out there. We understand that everybody's struggling in this climate. Whatever they can do, we appreciate all the support.
Rainey Smith of North Preston recently won 2 Music Nova Scotia Awards, and she's coming to the Highland Arts Theatre for a Christmas concert with Carlton Stone. Here's Alicia McNeil.
Well, in just a month and a few days, it will be Christmas, and that means holiday parties, seasonal concerts, and two special concerts around the CBRM next month. We'll be at the Highland Arts Theater, one with Willie Stratton and Elise Aaron, and another with Carlton Stone and Rainey Smith. And I have the pleasure of chatting with one of those talented musicians right now, Rainey Smith. Hey, Rainey, how are you today?
Not bad at all. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And thanks for chatting with me for a few minutes. Congratulations on freshly winning a couple Music Nova Scotia awards. Could you mention what ones they were?
I won Musician of the Year and African Nova Scotian Artist of the Year.
For people who may not have heard about you, how would you introduce yourself?
Well, first of all, I'm just a lover of music. I grew up in a very musical family, so my home was always filled with a lot of noise, but you could call it good noise, I guess. And so, yeah, just growing up, learning to fall in love with music, and then deciding in high school that, you know, this is kind of what I want to do with my life, and thus far it's been good to me, so.
And you're very proud to be from North Preston, Nova Scotia.
Yeah, a lot of who I am as not even just an artist, but a person is, it just comes from where I grew up and the community environment and the culture here. So yeah, very proud to be from here.
Now, again, you did come from a musical family, your parents, uncles, grandparents, correct?
Yep, pretty much everybody.
Who inspires you the most?
You know, I just think about my parents and my grandparents, just seeing them kind of work in this industry and for the most part, make a lot of things happen for themselves that they probably didn't see. But, you know, just having their support and, you know, their belief in me, it really inspires me. And I know a lot of my fellow peers, a lot of them don't have the same support from family. So it's just really cool to get that from them. And I just look at them as that kind of inspiration. I want to make them proud because, you know, they kind of invested in me and my biggest fan.
Now, the Coast 89.7 is a big supporter of East Coast music. We play some of your songs. How would you describe your sound?
I'm a huge R&B person. That's kind of what I grew up listening to, that and gospel and blues. I studied jazz for a while, so it was a mix of a lot of things, but, you know, I just try to just put a lot of my personality and my emotion into the music, which comes off as, you know, something really soulful.
And it must feel so nice to be back on stage after the whole COVID pandemic, ECMAs a few months back, and you were recently a special guest for Classified. How did all of that go?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, the pandemic was definitely tough, just waking up and knowing that there's really nothing to do. So it just feels like you have no purpose going through the day. But being able to be back and see how, you know, music really affects people, really puts into perspective how important being a musician is and how you can affect people's lives and really shift the atmosphere in terms of how people are feeling. So for me, I'm happy to be back, happy to be around people again and really, you know, just sharing some music and some stories.
Yeah. And you were all over the country with Luke, right? With Classified?
Yeah. We went from coast to coast. So yeah, it's been a long run of shows, but it's been so great, not just for me, but for the whole crew who was on tour. And
nice.
Yeah, excited to wrap it up at home in Nova Scotia. And
yeah. So like I mentioned at the beginning of our chit chat, you are performing at the Highland Arts Theater in Sydney next month, December 22nd to be exact. What will we expect from you from there?
Well, if you've seen me before, much of the same. And if you haven't, you know, really uplifting, upbeat, cheerful type of show. Also there with my good friend Carlton, we'll be doing some numbers together. We've written with each other before, so we'll probably share some of those songs. And, you know, we're just looking to have fun and come in. It's a couple days out from Christmas Day. We want to help make it a better time for folks.
And I was going to mention Carlton Stone. How well do you know that Cape Breton boy?
I've known Carlton for a long time now. I think we met, I might have been still a teenager at the time, met Gordy Sampson Songwriter Camp. Since then, we've still remained great friends, and not just on an industry level, but personal friendship. And he's one of my best buds in the industry.
Oh,
and
he's pretty cool. Now, I heard Where You At, Santa, your new Christmas single the other day for the first time. I am so excited to spin it here on the coast. Did you write that song?
I did. I wrote that song. I wanted to... write something that was a little funny. And also, we always talk about to children how, you know, if you're not good, Santa's going to leave you a lump of coal for Christmas. So I just wanted to take more of an adult spin on it and made this quirky story in my head and put it to music. So
that's awesome. Well, I can't wait to hear it live on December 22nd. And is there anything else going on with you, Renee?
A lot of good things, though. Yeah, doing a string of Christmas shows throughout the province. Some special guests along the way. So it's going to be a great lead up to Christmas, and I'm looking forward to all of it.
Well, all the best to you, Renee. And Christmas must be special with your family and singing and whatnot as well, right?
For sure.
100%. Well, hope to bump into you in just over a month. And thanks so much for your time today.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Great.
It's been a huge undertaking, but we have, like, honestly the best team ever. We started in September of 2019, and once we decided what the project was going to look like, you know, in our heads, we spoke to the mayor and the councillors and did presentations, and we went to all the three levels of government and all of those great things, and the support has been absolutely overwhelming since then. What started out as a project that was expected to be about $1 million is now $3.5 million. and we now have just about enough money to finish it. We need a little bit more, so we continue to do fundraisers, but we're almost there, I'd say 95%. And we really do pride ourselves on everything we do. We try to do it really, really well so that the people, I mean, money doesn't come by easily for folks these days. It's a tough go. So anytime we have any kind of an event or fundraiser of any sort, we really try to do it as well as we possibly can. And this Rock the Hill event is huge. So we've started a year early, and we've got our lineup all set, our musical lineup, and we're working on all the logistical details now. But it's super exciting.
It's a bit down the road. Are you able to share who's on the lineup for the event?
I certainly can. So we're going to start the afternoon. It starts at 6 o'clock in the evening. It will be held at outside. It's an outdoor event, rain or shine, and it will be at the Dominion Legion in their backfield. The Turnbull brothers from Glace Bay, Evan and Aaron, will be there with Mario Colosimo. So they'll start the day off at 6 o'clock. Then after them, we're going to have High Society and the Privateers. Then the amazing Morgan Tony and Keith Mullins will be after them. And then the headliners are the Irish Descendants from Newfoundland. So we're pretty great lineup, and we'll go right till midnight with that.
One of the artists you mentioned there, we've been trying to get in touch with him at the radio station here for a little while. Incredible opportunity coming up for him. Morgan Tony, he was invited to perform for the United Nations. So you must be very happy to have him and the others, of course, on the lineup.
I heard that. It's just amazing. So, you know, we're so proud. You know, he's just representing Cape Breton so well, and his Indigenous community as well, of course, right? But his music is amazing.
How would you describe the level of willingness for the artists who will be performing at Rock the Hill and other events around the island? With all the time they put into the preparation for the event and the performing and the travel, there's always a great willingness there for people to help out in events like this.
100%. The people just jump at it, you know. Absolutely. And even the folks with the Irish Descendants, their promoters and that, they were really excited when I explained what the project was and what we were doing and why we were doing it, and the accessibility and inclusion and all of that stuff. They were super excited, and they couldn't wait to get this rolling for us.
And the previous times we spoke, Lisa, we had to give a tip of the cap to your mascot, your world-famous mascot there, very interesting character, Hecky. How did he get his name, by the way?
Hecky's name comes from a gentleman named Heck Andrews, who he was raised in the Gardner area, and he played baseball in Dominion for their Colliery Leagues. That was back in the 1930s. And in 1938, Mr. Andrews was playing. He hit the longest home run recorded in Canada at that time with a wooden bat, 478 feet. The ball went out into the ocean, and there were fishermen there, and they caught the ball. So we do have the ball, and we have the bat. And we thought, well, what an accomplishment that was. And so why not name our mascot after him. And actually, his grandson is on our team, our society team, so, and helping to put this all together. So it's pretty amazing. Hecky was actually born with one wing shorter than the other, and he wears glasses.
And how did the youngsters respond to Hecky? Did they have an understanding of how, you know, they may have some things in common, and how but they're just there to really have fun and to enjoy each other's company?
They really do. They noticed it right away when we had his unveiling in the summer for his birthday party. The children noticed right away. And they were the first people to point it out. He has one, you know, one wing shorter than the other. And, you know, look, Hecky wears glasses like me. You know, so that they can connect with him that way.
And I think for our listeners out there, if they haven't seen Hecky yet, if they visited your Facebook page or your website, they may just catch a glimpse of Hecky.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we put Hecky's everywhere. He's a huge part of our team, so... and you will, of course, see him at Rock the Hill. You'll see him at our opening ceremonies earlier that day, and all over the community. We want Hecky to be everywhere so the kids can hang out with him. He's really fun.
And what about anyone out there, Lisa, who would like to help you and Hecky and the rest of the team? Anyone willing to step forward for some volunteer time to help put this event together for the summer?
We absolutely are going to need some extra people. I mean, our team and their families have been volunteering to help out right from the get-go, and we cannot thank them enough. I mean, we wouldn't have what we have without volunteers. And for the event, Rock the Hill, it's massive. We're hoping for about 3,000 people. And we'll have beer tents and food trucks and local vendors, so like a little vendor village. So we are definitely going to need some help. If anybody's interested, they can contact me through the Hawk Streamfield Facebook page.
Okay, I think that wraps up all the questions I had for you, Lisa. Anything you'd like to add?
Sure. So for Rock the Hill, the tickets are actually now on sale. We're having a pre-sale for Christmas, and they're on sale now for $49.99. And they are available from up until December 24th for that price. And we're actually going through, the folks at Center 200 are helping us out with the tickets. So they're selling them through Ticketmaster. But if people go to our website, hawkstreamfield.ca, and click on the poster, it takes them directly to the page where they order the tickets.
It's meant to be the most wonderful time of the year, but a lot of families and people are struggling this year throughout Cape Breton, and even more so in the Glace Bay community. Thank goodness they have the Glace Bay Food Bank to fall back on. Linda's with me right now. Linda, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Now, Linda, you've seen the numbers rise over the last couple of months. We had to deal with COVID over the last number of years, and then with Fiona. And then you're seeing faces that you've never seen before because they're just finding it absolutely just too tough.
They are finding it really tough. We have people out there who are working and they're still struggling. They know, they feel the need that they have to come to us. They don't want to have to trade off. Do I pay my rent? Do I get my medication? Do I eat? So I'm really pleased that we're here and we can give the food hampers out to help them.
Now, there's so many people, like I said, you're seeing new faces coming in. And I'm sure a lot of them, you know, they don't want to be there. But when it comes crunch time, they have to go.
They do. I mean, we have seniors, we have single people, we have families, we have children, and they need to be fed. A lot of them, like I said, don't want to be here. I see a lot of new faces now. There's a bit of, oh, my heavens, I can't believe I'm at the food bank. But I need people to know that's what we're here for, and we're here to help, and we're here to make sure that they can have food for their bellies.
Now, and it's not just people that, that may be on assistance or are not working, but some of the newer group are actually working. We call them the working poor, and they need help as well.
Absolutely. And they call and they're almost in tears saying, I'm trying, but we just can't do it. The cost of living is really at a lot of people's doorsteps right now. And they're trying, but they just can't do it. And they need our help.
Now, one can of beans, one can of soup can make a big difference for the Glace Bay Food Bank.
I always say one can, two can, we all can.
Wow.
And yeah, I do. And that's my new motto, because I always try to tell people, you don't have to come in here with a bag full, an arm full, one or two of something. And if we can put that on our shelves to keep our food hampers filled so that people do have enough to get them through the month.
What kind of items do you need this time of year?
This time of year, we appreciate everything. But again, the weather's getting cold. So soups, peanut butter, craft dinner, anything like that would be greatly appreciated. Jams. But like I said, we appreciate everything and can use whatever's brought into the building.
So folks are hearing this for the first time, never been to the Glace Bay Food Bank, wondering should I go or not go, and you're in need. You won't turn anybody away. So
we will not turn anybody away. Everybody's welcome. Life just gets in the way sometimes and puts us in a position where we need a little help. There's such a friendly bunch of volunteers here. The door is open, and we welcome anybody. Please do not be out there and not have anything.
So folks are looking for something to eat. Tell us your hours, when you're open, and when they can drop by.
To get a hot meal, they can drop by between 9 and 11 o'clock, Monday to Friday. And to get a food hamper, if they're not registered with us, they can sign up and register. You can also come in as an emergency. We won't turn you away. And the food hampers go out Monday to Thursday from 9 to 12, and on Friday from 9 to 11.
Now, when you say food hamper, what's in that food hamper?
Oh, a little bit of everything. There's canned goods, there's coffee, there's tea bags, there's whatever we have. It goes in that food bank. We're lucky enough sometimes to have milk and juice. And another important factor of our program is to have things for children that we can give so that the children can have it for school lunches or even to have it at home.
Now, Christmas is just around the corner, and it'll soon be ramping up into even more of a demand. And if folks, again, if they can make a donation, they can drop it off. What's your hours there? Monday to Friday, or you're open on the weekend? How does that work?
Yeah, Monday to Thursday, we're here from 9 till 3 o'clock. And on Friday, we're here from 9 till 12.
Okay, and a phone number if you want to call to use the service or make a donation?
902-849-0750.
And you also have a Facebook page and a web page as well, right?
We do. And like I said, our community has been amazing. The people have been amazing. It's just our need is growing, so we need to add more product to downstairs that we can put in the food hampers.
Well, Linda, we appreciate this, and good luck with over the next couple of weeks as we provide food to people that really, really need it. And again, like you said, you don't turn anybody away, so we encourage you to drop by.
And thank you for having us and getting our story out there. We really appreciate it.
That's all for Dialogue this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill McCush.
Catch Dialogue 3 times weekly, Sunday at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-284-NEWS. That's 902-284-6397. Or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcasts, available now online at coastalradio.ca.